Hi, this is Susie Larson. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast of Live the Promise. You know, shows like this are made possible because of your continued support of Faith Radio. To learn more, please check out our website at myfaithradio.com. Live the Promise. So glad you tuned in. And if you just tuned in, you missed my first hour discussion with Johnny Erickson Tada, talking about how God meets us in our places of suffering and weakness. And then that second half hour, we just played some songs and just talked about how God is with us. Well, we're switching gears now, and we're going to talk about how to affair-proof your marriage. So here I have a question for you. Have you ever unknowingly let your guard down and found yourself in a vulnerable situation, one that could have really changed the whole trajectory of your life? Or maybe you knowingly flirted with the edge and temptation. How did that turn out? You know, I once had a listener call in, and I'll never forget this. She said, "I thought the burden of obedience to God, given the current state of my marriage, would have been heavier than the consequence of my sin." She said, "Let me tell you, I couldn't have been more wrong." And so this is why I wanted to bring this guest back today. We've had him on a few times. We're going to talk with Dave Carter, author of the book Close Calls, What Adulterers Want You to Know About Protecting Your Marriage. So I'm not going to waste another moment. I'm going to get him on the show. Dave Carter serves as pastor responsible for counseling ministries at the First Evangelical Free Church of Fullerton. His main task is the oversight, training, and supervision of the extensive lay counseling program of the church. His books include Promises from Proverbs, Torn Asunder, Helping Couples Recover from Infidelity, and Close Calls, what we're talking about today. Dave and Ronnie have four adult children, five grandchildren who live locally, and you can find his influencer page on our website at myfaithradio.com. Dave, welcome back to the program.
Hi, glad to be back.
Yes, well, we love to start out our conversations talking scripture, and I'm just wondering if there's a verse that God's been speaking to you about these days, or maybe you have a life verse you could share?
Well, I do have a life verse. I think I might have shared last time, I can't remember, Ecclesiastes 5:18 through 20. It's a great verse about finding satisfaction in this life, given the fact it's difficult and not always comfortable. I'll read it for you. "Then I realized it's good and proper for a man to eat and drink and to find satisfaction in his toilsome labor under the sun during the few days of life God has given him. For this is his lot. Moreover, when God gives any man wealth and possessions and enables him to enjoy them, to accept his lot and be happy in his work, this is a gift to God. He seldom reflects on the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with gladness of heart."
Oh, that's so good. Talk a little bit about just how what that's meant to you in your own life.
Well, you know, we all have days at work that are exhausting or draining or frustrating or make us think, "I can't do this another day. I'm getting out of here. I can't stand this job." But I think that those kind of thought patterns probably go back thousands of years. I think every human being that's lived on the face of the earth has had those kind of days at whatever they do to make a living. Mm. And it's finding satisfaction in the mundane things. It's your lot. This is my lot. This is your lot. You don't always get to choose your lot. Some lots are more difficult than others to live in, but the point is you can still find satisfaction in it. Mm-hmm. Kind of boils down to this thought. People are about as happy as they want to be.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth?
Yep.
Yep. Wow.
It's all in the attitude.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the book and just what inspired you to write it. You were counseling with many couples. The title, again, is Close Calls, What Adulterers Want You to Know About Protecting Your Marriage. Such a gripping book. But talk about just when you finally said, "No, I have to write this book," the inspiration behind it.
Well, the first book I wrote was about helping couples recover from infidelity, and that came out of my own personal experience back in 77 when my second senior pastor ran off with another woman in the church. And that's when I returned to graduate school and began to work on those concepts of helping couples recover from adultery. There wasn't anything out there at that point in time. So I spent 15 years, maybe, close to 15 years, working with those kinds of couples. And in that process, began to realize, I need to write something about preventing this. And that's kind of the vision behind Close Calls. And taking my experience and transforming it into a solid barrier boundary to protect couples.
And you're going to find by the end of our conversation that you can actually learn some things from adulterers. So you got to hang in here with us and listen to this whole program.
Oh, yeah, because, I agree. That's true.
Yep, it is.
I think those are the best teachers.
Absolutely. And
everything they've gone through has never ended well.
Right.
Affairs never end well.
Exactly. So, and I thought it was so interesting how you said that rarely is the attraction the issue. It's more the sense of availability. So say a word about that these affairs that happen, the initial thing usually isn't attraction, like, oh, I slipped because I was suddenly attracted. There's more going on than that.
Oh, yeah. I think the vulnerability is the big issue. There's over time and across distance in a marriage, couples, individuals, spouses become needy, and they often refuse to talk about it, or they might even try to stuff it down and be unaware of it, or they might talk about it and their spouse isn't interested in hearing it. So feeling isolated, alone, maybe nothing more like a paycheck or the maid at the house, somebody comes along and pays them some extra attention, and basically they fall very quickly. Because the attentions of another individual are mood-altering experiences. They change your mood immediately. So we talk about the five A's. I'm not sure I can recall them off memory, but I'll try. Affirmation, adoration, affection. There's two more here I want to talk about, especially admiration, where you actually admire the work a person does or the way they do a certain thing. Those are what all affairs are built on. People share those, and wow, that felt good. I wish my spouse would say that kind of stuff to me.
It's so interesting. You said that each of us have a dangerous partner profile person that we're actually susceptible to.
Oh, yeah.
And that involves some of the deficits in our own marriage, places where we are vulnerable. But say more about that dangerous partner profile person.
Well, I kind of learned this one time when a woman told me. She said, you can always tell people who are susceptible to infidelity, to flirting, to teasing. You can always tell them. They're unhappily married. I wouldn't waste my time flirting with a man who is happily married because I've already had too much rejection in my life. So I look for the unhappily married. I said, you're kidding me. No, she said, that's exactly why it works. But when we talk about vulnerabilities, we talk about developmental lags, where people haven't really grown up, they haven't developed fully, they maybe were involved in some kind of trauma or difficulty, maybe parents divorced, maybe they went through some abuse, molestation, maybe they started drinking when they were in teenage years, so they just never quite developed fully the way they're supposed to. And sometimes we're especially attracted to certain personality styles, yet they're kind of intimidating to us, so we marry somebody maybe who's a real steady Eddie, but we like somebody who is kind of chaotic and spontaneous, and we always admired that. So over time, we've become vulnerable to that kind of experience. Or hobbies and interests. You share a hobby or interest with another person, it automatically builds a center of attention and attraction and shared interest. And you begin to save information. It might be some kind of music, so you begin to save CDs because your spouse isn't interested in music, but this person is. And so you feel like you begin to develop an interest with someone, a shared interest, and you've starved the marriage and you feed the friendship.
I don't remember which the name of the gal in one of your stories. You tell so many stories that just make us, make me just sit up a little straighter and pay attention. But I think if I remember right, I don't think she grew up in kind of a chaotic culture. So she was drawn to this husband who was a steady Eddie, but eventually she got bored. She started to teach English as a second language and started to engage with these students to the point where she got personally involved and then was getting a motorcycle ride with one of them at inopportune times and suddenly realized oh, my word, this is not wise. And she went and confessed to her husband. And but they took that as an indicator. They need to build excitement into their marriage. I mean, that's a
good
classic example, isn't it? Just of,
oh, it's a classic example. Yeah, I think most Christians, they're not out looking, you know, for someone else. And so they often approach it when the feelings begin to surface in denial. They just kind of push them back and discount them and all that kind of thing. And so sometimes they just kind of overwhelm you, though. We found that when we surveyed 4,000 pastors over a decade about how they got involved with other women. So, yeah.
Well,
very easy.
Very easy. Well, maybe you've got a question. We've got a few copies of Dave's book to give away. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. You know, I've co-hosted a show with Dr. Greg Smalley for about a year and a half, and one thing he often says in marriage counseling is you've got to stay curious about each other. We're always changing and growing, and
yeah.
It's like a death knell if you stop being curious. This would sort of fall into that, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. I love what Greg says.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same with the marriage. The marriage changes over time. You might be thinking that your spouse is just as happy with you and the relationship as they were when you were married 2 years, but you've been married 12 years now and you've never checked it up. You have absolutely no idea what he or she thinks about the marriage. So I always encourage my couples to go to couplecheckup.com. And for $39, you can take a review that's built upon one of the largest databases in the world on couples out of the University of Minnesota, and you get a great picture of your marriage.
Wow, couplecheckup.com. That's absolutely amazing. So do you think it's wise then, based on, you know, if a couple were going through this book saying, you know, we're strong, but I just want to look at areas that we might be vulnerable, especially the idea that there might be a profile, a dangerous partner profile that I have to watch out for. Would it be wise for them to sit down and say, okay, I've noticed a couple areas, you don't pursue me and I don't have enough excitement? I mean, to be able to say that in a way, though, so we can shore up our marriage, is that a good idea?
Oh, that's a great idea, because it's true. It's true in every marriage. It's not unique to yours. The point is the two of you need to talk about this relationship and what might be missing and what you would like more of and what maybe the spouse is trying to do that isn't really reaching you in ways that you want to be reached or loved. So, yeah, this is something that needs constant work. And in this day and age, with the high-speed activity, the stress, the pressures, the constant hitherto running like crazy with your kids, sporting events, you need to do even more of that kind of stuff.
Indeed.
You need to do more of it, and you need to do it more often.
I remember.
I have a little mantra. I said, you've got to spend money on your marriage instead of on the refrigerator or the car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the thing that's going to last until you die, Lord willing. That's why most of us get married.
Spend money on your marriage. Amen.
Yeah, spend money on your marriage.
Hmm. Well, we're going to take a short break here, and we'll love to hear from you. If you've got questions, and I want you to feel free to call in anonymously if you just feel more comfortable with that. But really, this is so marriages can last, right? I want to hear from you. 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484, or you can email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. We're going to talk a little bit more about risky behaviors, how to shore up your marriage, and even what we can learn from people who've been down this road and wish they hadn't gone there. There's something we can learn from them. Don't go away. More with Dave Carter in just a moment.
What I would say would be just be proactive about avoiding situations that might risk any kind of temptation. And that way, you're just so much better off, and it's easier to focus on the person that you're with and the love that the two of you have.
Good advice. Thanks for tuning in. This is Hour 2 of Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson talking to Dave Carter today. He's got a great book out called Close Calls, What Adulterers Want You to Know About Protecting Your Marriage. And so before the break, we were talking about a profile of your dangerous partner. In fact, if you think about some of the ways that you show up in marriage, there's low spots in your wall, so to speak, and ways that you can connect with somebody else. If you're not careful, you'll have an emotional attachment, developmental legs, personality style, hobbies, interests, attachment pattern, family of origin, marital void, pursuit pattern, internal age. Talk about that internal age issue. Help me understand that one a little bit more.
Well, let me tell you a story, okay? couple of physicians show up, mom and dad. This guy was a real brilliant doctor. She's a doctor, too. And he grew up in a family that really pressed education, pushed him, had tutors in elementary school, tutors in junior high school, tutors in high school, got out of high school, was accepted into a five-year MD BA program. There's only a few of those in the country. Went off to that, got into a residency afterwards, just crank. Finally, about the age of 35, he sat in my office. I said, "Why'd you do this?" And he said, "Well, about 35, I suddenly woke up one day, and I thought, I never had an adolescent. I married the only woman I ever dated immediately because my parents told me she would be the right one." So he said, "I'm going to date." Okay. And, you know, you can do that in Singapore, live like that guy did. Tutors, after school, language schools, all kinds of things, late at night, lots of homework. But in America, you have to have an adolescence. You have to go through adolescence. It's part of the developmental process. So internal age is a reflection. How old are you on the inside? And why are you that age? Did you get stopped in your development by some kind of trauma? Do you go back to a certain age because that's when you feel best and the age you are now biologically doesn't feel good, has too much pressure? It loads you down with responsibility. So internal age is always a vulnerable spot to the kind of person you're going to be attracted to. Were college years your favorite years and inside you never grew up beyond 20, 21? 20-year-old women, 20-year-old men, they're going to be the ones that are going to be your target. Not that you're going to target them, but that you're going to, that's going to be the ones that you're going to fall for. So internal age is almost always a factor. Some people are old. They're real old on the inside, and they hate it. They might be 80 when they're 30 because of all the responsibilities. They've been parenting. They raised all their siblings. They were parents to their alcoholic parents, and they were the growing up in the family, and they hit 30, 35, 40, and they say, "To heck with this. I've been raising a family since I was 5 years old. And so, how old are you on the inside?" "I'm 80, but I'm only a 35-year-old. I'm going to act like a 35-year-old.
So what's the answer to that? Because it sounds like if there's a disconnect between your outer age and your internal age, along with it comes a sense of entitlement. But that's not the destiny, so to speak, right? What's a person to do about it?
Well, the entitlement is the vulnerability, okay?
Right.
But being able to talk about it, and to share it with your spouse, and to grieve some of those things you missed and might never be able to pick up. It's pretty much the same kind of grief process that if you didn't have a father in your home, you can't go back and pick a father now if you're 30 years old, 35 years old. You don't want a father to father you, kind of train you, tell you what you can and cannot do, give you guidance in that sense of the word. And you have to report to and all that. People don't like that kind of stuff. But you do have an internal age. We hear women say this all the time. "I got four kids. Three of them are under 10, and one of them's 35. Okay? So that's the internal age. And we'll say to people, they never grew up, you know? So many times parents will marry off a child in their 20s with gratitude that maybe this new spouse will help them grow up.
Okay, so in a scenario that you would hope for, a spouse would recognize the disconnect in the internal age, go to their spouse and say, "I need some adventure. Life has been one long, giant responsibility."
Yeah.
And they would work together to kind of bring the connection back together.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And make it fun and engage in the process. You know, I grew up in a German family with a German mom. We had fun, but I wasn't a fun-loving guy. So you know what I'm going to do, don't you? When it comes time to choose a girlfriend, I'm going to choose somebody who's spontaneous, chaotic, fun-loving. I would rather play than work because I'll take care of all the work in our marriage. You just take care of all the play. Now, if you stay like that, that's codependent, okay? But the best thing I've ever learned, I've learned a lot of things from my wife, but the best thing I've learned is how to have fun.
That's so great.
We had a big conference one time and sat around. We were having a kind of a discussion about that, eight of us couples. I said, "I'm most indebted to my wife for learning how to have fun."
That's good. I always say playing is an act of faith.
You never know the outcome, do you?
Well, I think it declares that more rests on God's shoulders than on ours, so we need to have the faith to be able to play. Okay, so how about pursuit pattern? Talk more about that.
Okay, I asked Sam one day. This is his wife called me up on the phone and said, Dave, my husband's living with a prostitute in Central America. I want you to call him and tell him to come home and save his marriage. I said, well, give me a number. I've never done this before, but I'll be glad to call him. So I called him, and he came home, and I said to him, Sam, why'd you do this? He said, well, Dave, I sat at my deck one night, and I started making a list of all the people I had taken care of in my life. People, I paid for educations. I paid for weddings. I bought cars. I fixed orthodontics, medical expenses. I just made a huge list, and I suddenly realized, for the first time, nobody has ever taken care of Sam. So I had this whim. I'm going to fly to Central America. I'm going to find me a woman to take care of me and take care of everything in my life. And I'm just going to let her take care of me. And he did. Now, I don't agree with what he did, and it was very painful coming back to this marriage, but the situation was nobody had ever pursued Sam and his needs, but he had pursued everybody else and taken care of their needs.
And here
he
again,
ran out of gas.
Here's why we need to keep talking to each other, because one of the things we do is we settle into our roles and we go on that autopilot where we've got to keep talking. Like, is this still working? Is there ways that you feel neglected? I mean, we have to have those conversations, don't we?
Absolutely, because it happens automatically, okay? And we all make assumptions about our spouse that until we have the hard conversations, you could be dead wrong and not even recognize it.
So what if you have a spouse who just doesn't pursue? You say, I need to be pursued. I feel vulnerable that I'm not pursued by you. I feel vulnerable when people notice me. What do you do if the spouse says, it's just not who I am?
Well, I want to tell you, there's lots of people in this world today, in this culture, who will be glad to pursue your spouse. Mm. Okay. So you make up your mind what you're going to do. Are you going to be stubborn and kind of passive-aggressive and refuse to do what needs to be done in this marriage? Or are you going to get your fanny in gear and learn how to meet your spouse's needs?
Good question. My friend Smalley, Greg Smalley, says he puts Post-it notes on his computer just to remind himself to text his wife because he gets so task-oriented. He thought, if it takes a Post-it, I'm doing it. And one day he sent a kind of a flirty Post-it, flirty text
a little
to his wife.
Yep.
And he accidentally sent it to his boss. But that's Greg for you.
Well, I can understand how that happens. There are dangers in this texting thing, okay?
But the point being, if it takes a Post-it, a calendar marker, it doesn't matter. I mean, take sides against yourself and pursue your spouse, right?
Yeah. I want to tell you, the way you used to be is not good enough for the way you should be and need to be now.
Boy, that's tweetable. Say it again.
Well, the way you used to be is not good enough for the way you need to be and should be now.
All right. See?
And you change. She changes. You need to adjust this thing.
Mm.
Have you seen the YouTube video of the couple in their 80s playing the grand piano in the Mayo Clinic's lobby?
No. I got to do that.
Oh, my goodness.
I'll have to look for it. You make me
laugh. They're in there for a medical checkup, okay?
I have
they're
to stop.
They're both musicians, and they're playing the piano.
Pause
and they're
right there,
both on the keyboard together.
Pause.
So every time he walks by, and they change. They're doing the lower end of the piano and the upper end. They're going back and forth. And every time he walks by, he swats her on the behind.
It's an audience
that's just in there for medical treatment. They're all howling, laughing.
Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Closely connected in your home life. You do that emotionally, you do that physically, you do that verbally. you stay also closely connected in your faith. And if you work on both of those dimensions of your relationship, then you have the highest probability of being well connected with each other and protected against the temptations to stray.
Hmm. Susie Larson here. This is Live the Promise, having a great conversation with Dave Carter about what adulterers want you to know about protecting your marriage. And Dave, I can't remember if I told you this story last time you were on, but I was at a Christian Writers Conference. I've met lots of author friends throughout the years, but this particular friend ended up having an affair, and I knew that she was just dying a slow death in her marriage. But she told me later, she said, I could tell that when I first met you at that conference, there was no opening in your heart. She said, because we would stand in these mixed crowds with guys and gals. And she goes, I could have looked around the room and told you who was available. And she said, you were clueless. And I'm like, I was clueless. I had no idea that was even in your head. But there is something about that, a receptivity. Is that what that is? And the fact that she could look around the room because she herself was so vulnerable?
I have heard several people tell me that.
Wow.
I have. And I can't quite pick up on that myself, although some people are real forward, and those kind of people can scare you to death, you know. But and you recognize the blatant sexuality and offers that they're making. But the people who are vulnerable, they're kind of hard to pick up. They've tried to hide it for years. But people tell me you can pick up on that when you're looking for it. You know, a wounded soul, you can find them. They're out there. Lots of them.
You wrote, there are people out there in your world who are looking for unhappy spouses. They will settle for someone they can make happy or someone who can make them happy, even for a short period of time. And so you look at how costly and dangerous that is.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I want you to talk about these putting these affair components back in our marriage. These are the things when we talked about this last time.
Yeah.
I'm telling you what, it like rocked my world. And so here they are, childhood magic, adolescent sexuality, and adult mobility. Let's start with childhood magic. That's one thing adulterers laid hold of that many marriages lose sight of.
Oh, exactly. I can't tell you how many wives told me, well, he didn't have to change diapers with her. He didn't have to pay any bills or go buy groceries. Well, of course not. That's the beauty of an affair. It's totally irresponsible. I learned about this. I figured this out in the economy section of a 747 coming back from Amsterdam to New York one time. This is years ago. I sat in the front seat of the economy section, and I could look into the business class section. And that was before they had the lay flat beds in there. But in the back row of this 747 of the business class section was a man probably 55 and a 20-year-old young woman that, as I watched them, they didn't care who saw what. They didn't care what happened. They were going to have fun on this flight. This is probably their last time together. And I realized then that's what happens to people who have affairs. They kind of enter into a world of childhood magic. If you've ever taken your kids to Disneyland and look at their face, it's childhood. Those people in those costumes, they're real. Okay, this is what I've dreamed about watching TV for years, okay? And that's that childhood magic where you're totally irresponsible. You don't have to give account to anybody. You turn off your phones. You turn off your computers. You can get up when you want to. You can eat what you want to. You can drink what you want to. You can stay up all night if you want to. You don't have to take care of anybody. You don't have to listen to anybody cough or get medicines. You're all by yourselves. Totally narcissistic, okay? Now, that's the way you are when you're in love with each other, when you're highly infatuated with each other. Now, here's the key. I'm going to go through the rest of these in just a second. A good marriage knows how to turn on infatuated feelings for each other whenever they want to.
Okay. I'm still listening.
Okay. So the infatuation you had for your spouse is still in your brain. I know that because of what's happening to marriage today when people find old girlfriends and boyfriends on Facebook or classmates.com. What happens? They get in touch with each other, and the old infatuation comes back, even if that woman has gained 50 pounds. It's not the current look that matters. It's the memories that are stirred up. So every good marriage knows how to re-trigger infatuation through great memories.
And there's something to be said about, you know, being unavailable. I mean, look at that and how, you know.
Oh, tension. Don't get me started. That's one of the problems guys do. Guys destroy their marriages because when their wife wants to flirt with them early on, they pick them up, cart them upstairs to the bedroom, have sex with them. Well, I want to tell you something. That'll turn a wife off faster than anything. They need to create sexual tension. When I work with couples in recovery processes, one of our goals is for the two of you to learn how to create sexual tension in your marriage. The same kind of sexual tension that you had when you dated and couldn't have sex. It's like, I can't wait to get my hands on you. Okay? And so that tension needs to be cultivated. Both spouses need to have a part in that. And you will ruin it. Wives will quit flirting if you go have sex with them every time they flirt. They're going to quit. Mm. And they have the innate ability to do that. A mother does not usually teach her daughter, here's how you flirt. Okay. So it comes with a package. That's really fun.
I've said this 1,000 times. We're not that hard to sweep off our feet. I mean, pursue us and love us, and you got us. And so you think about that. I mean, really the challenge is take your spouse and go parking somewhere and make out. Can I just say that?
Whole adolescent sexuality thing.
The next thing. Yeah, I'm getting ahead of myself here.
Most of us in Christian marriages, we don't have sex except in the dark, between the sheets, lights out, doors locked, kids asleep. I mean, you got all of these conditions, and it gets dull and boring and routine very quickly. So you have a license. You're married. You paid for it. Go have fun. You know, the whole thing about the Song of Solomon in chapter 8 is she talks about taking her lover out to the vineyards, and they're having sex with him under the grapevines. Outdoors, every man's dream. I mean, seriously. It's in the Bible.
I'm sorry. I don't even know what to say. Let's go back to childhood magic.
Okay. Sorry. Now, the third one is adult mobility.
Okay, let's hear it.
Adult mobility means you meet each other at odd times and in odd places, just like you would if you were having an affair. Now, you don't do this every day. You don't have that kind of time, okay? But you do it often enough that it generates great memories between the two of you. If you had a girlfriend or a boyfriend, you would meet them at odd times of the day. But we don't do that. Hmm. We say goodbye to our spouse in the morning after a hectic hour and a half of getting kids breakfast and dressed and out the door to school, and we come back and we see them again that night when we're going to start the routine all over and throw in homework and baths, okay? So we don't see each other odd times of the day. But if you had a girlfriend or boyfriend, you would. If you had an hour and a half lunch and it took you a half hour to go see your girlfriend, you'd drive. And even if you could only be with her a half hour, you'd do it.
Yeah.
But people won't do that who are married. They say, well, we'll meet. Well, I'll see you tonight. Well, that's dull, predictable, boring, sterile, whatever other word you want to throw into the pot. It's bad.
And I know you know this. You would say this, I should say, from your years of experience counseling couples, that your best case scenario is with the person you're with. So if you can endure those low places and get back some of these things, that's your best case scenario, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's not newness that counts. It's differentness.
Hmm.
So don't go get a new spouse or girlfriend. You just got to learn to do things different in your marriage.
And this goes back to what Dave, you're saying, and I love this, and I've quoted you so many times in the years past, spend money on your marriage. So now back to childhood magic. So again, give us some examples of how, because I'm challenging you, you're listening today, spend money on your marriage. What does that look like? How do you create childhood magic? What are some creative ways to do that?
Well, sometimes you don't have a lot of money. You take a blanket to the park and you go to a secluded area and you have a little picnic, just the two of you, and you take a little nap right there in the blanket. You do whatever you have to do to get alone by yourself, enjoy each other's company, and have nobody around during that period of time. Nobody can call you. Nobody can interrupt you. This is our little reprieve. Hmm. Now, my wife and I used to do that when I come home from work. We had a couch in our bedroom. We'd go up, shut the door. We got a half hour together before we ever saw the kids. It required some work with videos to keep them entertained and taken care of. We had four kids. We were busy people. And I was in graduate school 10 years during that time raising those kids. So you can find little bits and pieces of childhood magic where you're just caught up with, enthralled with who your wife or with your husband.
I remember when in our early years of marriage, three little boys, we had so much pressure with my sickness and lots of things, but I made a picnic on our bedroom floor and I lit a candle and I made his favorite stuff and it didn't cost anything extra, but then I knocked the candle over and started the carpet on fire.
Okay, now, do you think you'll ever forget that?
Never.
Never, 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 never.
He just asked me to do the whole picnic thing with the table next time.
Well, let me give you a great website for this. Gamesforloving.com. Gamesforloving.com is a programmed communication tech tool for couples written by a Christian programmer. It's fabulous. You can try it free for 30 days. You enter a lot of demographic information about each one of you. And then every time you sit down to talk and you can't think of anything to talk about but the kids or work, you can choose a logic tree in this thing and you can go off and you will not – it'll never run out of questions.
Can I have that website again?
It never runs out of exercises for you to do.
Give it to me one more time.
Gamesforloving.com.
Got it. That's awesome. Okay,
it's
now
Christian,
I'm almost,
it's wonderful.
Great. Gamesforloving.com. So I'm almost afraid to go back to this one, but we have to. So spending money on your marriage, adolescent sexuality. How do you? So we're talking about creating some magic, some fun, some childlike, adventures, and then the adolescent sexuality where you're kind of covert. Say more about that and what that.
Well, one of my little premarital gals here a few years back in the class, about 3 years back, and she said, we have a panel, and so we always ask the couples who've been married 3 months or less to one of those couples to join our panel. And she said to the group, they're about 50 in there getting married. She said, I grew up in a Christian home. I've been the perfect little girl all my life. And all of a sudden, she said, I am having so much fun being naughty. So the point was, it almost seems naughty, but you have a license. God has blessed it. It's the bridegroom who's celebrating in the pictures, a scripture, a Song of Solomon. You're crazy about each other. You need to do even your lovemaking in different places and in different ways and try things. Here's what I tell my couples. The biggest hindrance to you being spontaneous and having fun, sexual fun with your spouse is this. I'm going to give it to you. You can figure it out in 3 minutes, okay? Give me three words your dad would have used to describe his sexual relationship with your mother, and give me three more words that your mother would have used to describe her sexual relationship with your father. Now, when you give this to college kids getting married, their first thought is, oh, it's gross. They can't think of their parents being sexual. But the reason is they just never have thought about it. It just takes a few minutes, and they will come up with the words. And they are in your brain. And those kind of thought patterns disrupt good, healthy, robust sexual activity between couples.
So you got to get those thoughts out of your brain. Is that what you're
saying?
You do. Because they're like roadblocks.
Exactly. In fact, the Berkeley Sex Therapy Group has a script list they use. There's 50 of them that they use, all kind of take off from those kinds of things. Yep.
Wow. Well, we need to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about that third aspect. What we can learn from adulterers is about adult mobility. This will be a challenge for you because maybe you got you and your spouse connect during the day. I know Dave will have some other ideas. And we'll take your questions. I know we are going to the edge here. And if you want to call anonymously, please feel free. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. Or you can email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. More with Dave Carter in a moment.
Ultimately reflects the relationship between Christ and the church. And the more that you meditate on the beauty of that relationship, the fact that God as bridegroom is faithful to his bride, just motivates you to be faithful to your husband or your wife because it's just a reflection of that.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson, having a great conversation with Dave Carter, and he's got a fantastic book. This book isn't just for marriages that are in trouble. In fact, I think it's for all of us who want to shore up our marriage. It's called Close Calls, What Adulterers Want You to Know About Protecting Your Marriage. And one thing Dave says is spend money on your marriage. And three things we can learn from adulterers is one is childhood magic, because they create something. Now, it's not lasting. It creates all kinds of damage, but create some childhood magic in your marriage and the adolescent sexuality. Don't let that thing become rote and boring. Really enjoy each other and find fresh ways to do that. I mean, we were joking, but go parking and kiss. That would be really fun. And then the third thing is adult mobility. And say a little bit more about that, especially with spending money on your marriage.
Well, adult mobility is a two-edged sword.
Yeah.
The negative side of it is spouses move around a lot, and in this world, you're going to bump into members of the opposite sex doing all kinds of things, from going to the gym to joining in a club, a hiking club, riding bikes, soccer moms and dads, watching your kids play soccer. You're just going to be intermingling all the time, working in soup kitchens, maybe on a worship team together. So the danger side of the two-edged sword is you're going to run into people where there are going to be attractions. That's the dangerous side of it. And it's common. It just happens. And I tell people all the time, if you haven't experienced it, you're either dead or in denial. Hmm. Seriously. So those attractions, though, highlight certain vacant spots in a relationship. And that's where you need to talk with your spouse about it and have an agreement with them prior to this kind of attraction developing. And I'll cover those contents in just a second. The positive side of the adult mobility is you have the freedom. It'll take you a little extra work, but you have the freedom to meet each other in unusual places and sites. I'll give you an illustration. One of my friends went to Paris, France, every other month, just about, for his company. And they would pay for his wife to go. She wouldn't go. She had three kids. She said it was too hard, childcare, babysitters. You know, I just felt it was maybe an intrusion. You go ahead and go. I said, I can't believe you. There are women in France who would love to spend time with your husband. She got real mad at me. But that is the truth. So that's a pretty extravagant thing as far as adult mobility goes. It can be as simple as meeting somewhere or getting away by just yourselves or going to a park or sneaking kisses and making out somewhere in the car. In fact, I can tell you this from research. One of the largest surveys ever done on sexual practices in the U.S. through a magazine and online survey format identified that if you're going to have an affair, 92% of affair partners have sex in the car. 92% acknowledged that. But, you know, we just don't do that kind of stuff. It's like, go ahead.
Dave, I'm sorry. You know, it just is so interesting when I even hear you counseling through these couples that the death knell is defaulting to what's easy, because people who are committing adultery go to great lengths to keep it secret, to meet privately. They inconvenience themselves. The world revolves around them. And there's an element there that's so important for us to see, that if we're just going to go, no, it's just too much work, that's the death knell, isn't it?
It is. It is. Your spouse is worth fighting for.
Mm.
Especially before they get in trouble, okay? So you just can't take them for granted, not in this culture. No more. It doesn't work that way. You've got to realize everybody's at risk, and even if they don't want to be, they will be, because there are people who will come after them. I can't tell you how many stories I've heard like that. And sometimes the person who seems to be so righteous and unattainable actually intrigues people of the members of the opposite sex, and they go after them even harder.
Mm. And you even said in your book, Dave, that so many of couples you've counseled felt like affair was the last thing on their mind. It almost felt like it blindsided them, and they thought they were immune. So what happened there?
Yeah. So you can't take that kind of attitude anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, and in the book towards the end of Close Calls, I talk about a contract that couples ought to make prior to talking about any of these kinds of issues. And I'm going to read some of those points because I just think they're terribly important. Mm. I will tell you when I feel attracted to a particular individual. Second promise, I promise to listen to you if you feel someone is attracted to me. Third promise, I will listen to you with respect when you share an attraction. And I further promise not to react angrily to this information, to discuss openly and honestly with you about this attraction, to work enthusiastically with you to adjust our relationship to better meet our identified needs. And I also promise to never knowingly cultivate a friendship with someone of the opposite sex.
Wow, those are so good. So good. Well, you said something a few minutes ago. I wrote it down. I would love for you to unpack it even more because it's so key. Attractions identify vacant spots in our relationship. So you said, you know, we're going to be attracted. That's just real. But this is almost information for us. So what about that?
It is.
You know, so say a little more about that.
Well, we all have voids in our marriage. No spouse is perfect. We all bring family of origin deficits into a marriage relationship. No one's perfect. And it's those empty spots that sometimes we are unaware of until they're highlighted by a close relationship like marriage that we get in trouble. We're just not aware of them. We haven't had any need to address them. So marriage brings out growth areas in all of our lives. Gary Thomas will tell us that. You know, it's designed to make you holy, okay? Not just happy. And so it brings about a sanctification process. This is something, Dave, you need to work on, okay? And that kind of awareness, acknowledgement, if you go into marriage just to get, you will fail. Okay. You will be giving, giving, giving. Everybody does. That's the way it works best. It's when you're both giving 100%. Now, the other side of that coin is it's not drudgery. You know, in fact, it happens very simply in the affair process. You know, you meet this person, you start talking to them, your conversation moves from outside yourself, like professional at work, to personal, what's going on inside yourself. And then you begin to find that you have a little mood alteration as you get an email from this person or you see them or you talk with them, and you might even compare them with your spouse, you know, wishing you had more of that kind of interaction at home. And then one of those days, you're going to come to a crossroads where you either have to stop it or hide it. Mm-hmm. And when you come to that crossroads, you will hide it. Hide it always wins.
Okay, you just touched on a few things because my next question was going to be, we're going to have to pray here in just a little bit, but just signs that you are on the rumble strip, signs that you've crossed the line. So maybe looking forward to communication, maybe a changed mood in connecting. What else?
Yeah, well, the mood is a huge thing. Another characteristic, you begin to save things to talk to this person about versus talking with your spouse about them. Sometimes that's due to the spouse not being interested in that particular topic. But when you save music, save articles, save topics, save this, that for this friendship, you're feeding that friendship. And when you feed it, you're going to get yourself in trouble. But the mood alteration is huge. The ongoing, ever-deepening conversation is a huge part of this. The little quiet voice in the back of your head says, this is getting dangerous. You need to stop this. And you keep on running. Well, then you'll begin to hide it. And you'll kind of give up because you'll say to yourself, you know, I get in trouble if I disclose it, and I'm going to be in trouble if I stay in it. It's more fun staying in it. I'm staying.
And the person, so the next step, if someone's listening going, okay, you got me, what's the next step?
Well, the only step is to run like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Get out of Dodge. Seriously. Get out of Dodge, suck a little air, and realize you just escaped a really serious close call. And then you need to get some help for your marriage. How did that close call weasel its way into my life? What am I missing? What can we do differently? Talk it over with your spouse. Oh, you'll be trembling.
Yeah. And you know what? And you get Dave's book, Close Calls. I'm telling you, even if you're not on the rumble strips, you'll only move forward in your marriage. You'll create some excitement, some joy, some fun, and you'll strengthen it in the process. Dave, wondering if you would pray for that listener right now who's realizing and recognizing some low places in their wall of their marriage and needing to shore their lives up.
Glad to. Lord, just be with these people who might be listening, who are becoming aware that change needs to occur in their relationship, that they will humble themselves and acknowledge this, and work with their spouse to improve it. And may their spouse be open and vulnerable to making the changes, and honest that they too probably aren't real happy in an unhappy marriage. So just help them to take the steps, initial steps, baby steps, and then honor and bless their efforts, Lord, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Dave Carter, you are just a gem. Thanks for joining us today.
Glad to. And I heard in the intermission time they found the song in the Mayo Clinic.
Yes, I'm going to put that up. I watched it. It's awesome. I hope that's me in about 100 years.
Yeah, you and me both. Exactly right.
Yes, God bless you, sir.
Okay, have fun.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in. You've been listening to Live the Promise. God bless you. Meet me back here tomorrow. Have a great day.